Through the hallway now, with its large, stuffed Nicholas Parsons, we move into the front room, where, waiting to talk to us, if you'd like to come through and sit down, there's a few of you already in here, waiting to talk to us is a fellow who has made that most rare of things, an intelligent TV show. Let him have another, please. Will you give a big, ballum, bash welcome to Stuart Lee?
Thank you. Thank you. I've just given up after 6 weeks. I've given up trying to get a British Telecom phone line in my flat because I ran up a £140 mobile phone bill being on hold. And I tried being sort of politely sarcastic and saying things like, I understand it must come as quite a shock to be asked to install a phone line. And then I knew I'd reached rock bottom when I ended up pretending to cry. I ended up pretending to cry to a woman in an Indian call centre for BT, going, the thing is, I'm self-employed, I've got a kid, I've got bills to pay, I need to work, and I can't work here without... But she still didn't call me back, despite that. There's no way of doing it. And I thought that's probably the most degrading, least manly thing I've ever heard of, pretending to cry to someone on the phone from BT to get a phone line. But I know I'm not a proper man because I don't like Top Gear. I know I'm not a proper man. Proper men should like Top Gear because Top Gear isn't afraid of anything. Top Gear flies in the face of politically correct orthodoxies and our respect for women or gays. It has no boundaries of that fashion. It's a proper male programme, and I know that I'm not a man because I don't like it. Jeremy Clarkson challenges liberal orthodoxy by driving over saplings in an armoured personnel carrier. And Top Gear thinks it's a success because it says what we're all too scared to say, apparently, about the environment and whatever, but I don't think that's why it's a success. I think the reason that Top Gear is a success is because the relationship, the power structure of the relationship between the three main presenters exactly mirrors that of the three bears. And I think that makes people feel very comfortable to watch it. They sort of feel they know where they are. Richard Hammond, the hamster. He's not a real hamster, but he's obviously Baby Bear. Then you would think that Jeremy Clarkson is the alpha male when you think he's Father Bear, but he isn't. James May is actually the alpha male. James May is Father Bear, Daddy Bear. Because it seems like Clarkson's running the show and being offensive and rude and making fun of the other presenters and whatever, but you know that if he had to, James May could smash Jeremy Clarkson's head off with a single blow of his enormous paw. He's the alpha male there. And I can't work out who I hate the most out of the three of them. You'd think it would be Jeremy Clarkson, wouldn't you? But I think Jeremy Clarkson is either an idiot or a genius, right? He's either an idiot who actually believes the things that he says, or he's a genius who's worked out the best way to annoy me to an infinite number of decimal places. The one I hate the most is Richard Hammond, the hamster. He's not a real hamster. And the reason I hate him is because he's kind of like a little coward hanging around with the bullies. That's what he's like. I was at school then. I was actually at school with Richard Hammond like 25 years ago. He's like a little coward. He's gutless. You know, if Jeremy Clarkson was out on a night out and he saw like a tramp asleep and started kicking him, Jeremy Clarkson would be kicking the tramp, going, come on, Richard. Come and kick the tramp with me. Come and kick him. And Richard Hammond would go, no, Jeremy, I'm just going to film it on my camera phone. When I was a kid, I could see it was going this way. He was at my school, like I say. He was about 3 years younger than me. I didn't know him, right? But one day I was out walking around the school and I saw this little kid, Hammond, being sort of shoved around by these boys that were about 15. I was about 16 at the time. And then I went up to him afterwards and went, what's going on? And he said, well, you know, they always pick on me every day and they make fun of me and call me the hamster. And well, there's like a bad name for him at school, the hamster, that he's reclaimed now. He's made it very much his trademark. I said, well, I'm the library monitor, right? I was the library monitor at school. It seems hard to believe. I said, if you get any trouble again, come to the library and you'll be all right then. And then about a week later, I didn't see him for about a week, and then he arrived at the library and said the bullies have been picking on him again. And I went, well, you can wait in here through the break, and you'll be fine. And first of all, he did what any 12, 13-year-old boy would do, left in a library over a break time. He kind of got out old books of Renaissance art and tried to find kind of naked paintings of women in them and stuff like that. Superboys. And books about tanks and stuff like that. But gradually, over the weeks, as he kept coming back and hiding there, I got him reading, like, stuff that I was into, like, you know, Kafka and Sartre and things like that. And I like to think that, you know, there was some kind of bond of, like, a relationship between us. And I've actually forgotten about this until I started trying to tell this story, that one day the bullies came to try and get him actually in the library. They'd worked out where he was going, and I saw they were coming. And the library had these doors with, like, round sort of handles on them with gaps in them. I went, quick, throw me the biggest two books that you've got, you can see there, Richard Hammond. And it was Ulysses by Joyce and War and Peace. And I got them and I slid them in between the handles, and the bullies that were trying to get Richard Hammond couldn't get in because they were sort of blocked by great literature, which seems hilarious when you think about it. I mean, if it wasn't true, you'd think it had been made up, that story, just like, through some kind of crass point, but it was actually true. And then over the weeks, I stopped seeing him quite so much. He stopped turning up. And then one day, I was walking around the school, and I saw him again. He was with the same kids that had been bullying him, but now they were all kind of mucking around and smoking and stuff like that. And I walked past him, and he sort of... I said hello to him, but he didn't acknowledge me. And then I heard one of them say to him, "Who's that, Richard?" And I wrote it down. Richard Hammond looked at me, and he said, "I don't know. It's some queer. Some queer bender from the sixth form who's always trying to feel me up." Now, none of that story about Richard Hammond is literally true. But that doesn't matter, because the important thing is that what it tells us about him is true. Thanks.
Stuart Lee, a smile, a reminiscence, a song, and a reference to Albert Camus. Now, if you'd like to come through here to the big finale's coming up.